That was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Russia and China Monday blocked a draft United Nations Security Council resolution calling for a 7-day ceasefire in the Syrian city of Aleppo. That resolution would have also called for an unimpeded access for the delivery of humanitarian aid to the city. Russian Ambassador Vitaly Churkin says the resolution would only worsen the suffering of civilians by enabling the rebels to regroup. But U.S. Deputy Ambassador Michelle Sisson says the resolution would actually have helped many people receive the aid they need.
With a wave of their hands, Russia, China, and Venezuela showed that they don't want the suffering of eastern Aleppo to end.
The vote on the resolution was 11 in favor, 3 opposed, and 1 abstention. NATO foreign ministers hold year-end talks Tuesday in Brussels. They will be focusing on forging closer ties with the European Union. The EU recently unveiled an ambitious new plan for defense spending and research. The upcoming administration of U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is also likely to be a key topic of discussion. This week's talks will also mark the last major NATO meeting for U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Kerry was in Berlin Monday to receive Germany's Order of Merit Award. He assured leaders the NATO alliance will endure.
We're going to be okay. We're going to make it, folks, and I'm absolutely confident about that. We just have to keep our heads about it and stay steady and keep working in the same direction. And this alliance is not just about the United States and Germany. This alliance is critical to everybody on this planet.
John Kerry speaking in Berlin. This is VOA News. A Gambian court has ordered the release of an opposition leader and 18 other political prisoners. The release order comes just days after President Yahya Jammeh lost an election and agreed to step aside. France's socialist Prime Minister Manuel Valls has announced he will run for president in next year's election, speaking Monday to an audience outside of Paris. Mr. Valls says he will quit his job as Prime Minister on Tuesday in order to focus on his run for president. Following the surprise resignation of New Zealand Prime Minister John Key, Deputy Bill English, Health Minister Jonathan Coleman, and Police Minister Judith Collins all say they will stand for the leadership position. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump picked neurosurgeon Ben Carson, formerly one of his Republican rivals, to be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development when the new administration takes office. Trump also met Monday with former Democratic Vice President Al Gore, who said he had a lengthy and productive meeting with the president-elect. The judge in the murder trial of a white former South Carolina policeman accused of shooting a black suspect Monday declared a mistrial in the case. Former patrolman Michael Slager was charged in the 2015 shooting death of 50-year-old Walter Scott. The 12-person jury had seemed close to a verdict on Friday, but Monday told the court they were unable to come to a unanimous decision. The jury deliberated for 4 days. With the Turkish lira, this year's worst-performing emerging market currency, Turkey's president has declared a patriotic war in support of the lira. Dorian Jones reports.
The Turkish lira has fallen more than 10% in the past month, adding to a year of heavy losses. And President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the currency crisis is the latest plot to unseat him. A failed coup took place in July, and Erdogan is warning that what conspirators could not achieve with tanks are now trying by financial means. He calls Sunday for all Turkish patriots to act. Those who keep dollar or euro currency under their mattress should come and turn them into liras or gold, he said. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
A Greek court has ruled against the extradition of 3 Turkish soldiers accused of involvement in July's failed coup in Turkey. The 3 soldiers, part of a group of 8 who fled to Greece, have denied the allegations. A boat packed with 35 Rohingyas fleeing from Myanmar and trying to sneak into Bangladesh capsized on a river, leaving at least 29 people missing. Several sources say that boat was loaded beyond its capacity. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ghana's main opposition candidate appeals to supporters to turn out in large numbers for tomorrow's presidential vote.
Firstly, imperative need to go out and vote on Wednesday. Everybody should come out and vote, because the more people get involved in the process, the more difficult it is to contort it before.
Nana Akufo-Addo is the presidential candidate of Ghana's main opposition New Patriotic Party. The United Nations launches a record appeal for nearly 93 million vulnerable people globally. Cameroon's government defends security forces' response to protest, but the opposition says the government is playing with fire if it does not meet the protesters' demands.
If Zabia doesn't give in to the teachers and the lawyers to come up with a solution to their problems, then things might get out of hand, because the younger generation is very hostile.
John Frundi is the leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. A new UN report says majority of the world's 10-year-old girls are disadvantaged in comparison with boys. And we'll take you to Senegal's capital, where the 5th annual Part Course art event is being held. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The main opposition candidate in tomorrow's Ghana presidential and parliamentary elections is calling on his supporters to turn out and vote. Nana Akufo-Addo of the New Patriotic Party, NPP, says the election is so important for many Ghanaians to choose not to vote. He also tells viewers Peter Clotty, who is in Accra to cover the election, that if elected, he will improve the economy and fight corruption.
Firstly, they're going to get a much more competent management of our national economy. We did so in Kufuor's period, and some of the key architects that brought our country from a hippie status to a middle, lower middle income are still in place. One of them is my running mate. At that time, he was in the central bank. We've proposed that we're going to establish an office of special prosecutor who will have a certain independence to be able to deal with issues of corruption, so that the political whiff involved in prosecutions of public officials is taken out. So you have these measures, comprehensive, having to strengthen also other institutions like the Shraj.
So let me ask you about the Electoral Commission. Some of your supporters have expressed concern about the way the election so far has been conducted and the preparation thereof. Are you confident that the Electoral Commission will administer free, fair, credible, and transparent election?
That's what she has said. The man who had been responsible for organizing the first 6 general elections in our history had just retired. He retired under somewhat of a cloud because of the litigation of 2012, when we went to the Supreme Court to challenge his work, essentially. And the Supreme Court and the country found that the work was deficient in many respects. So he left office under somewhat of a cloud. And somebody comes in then who then has that hurdle, first of all, to overcome, how to restore public confidence in the Electoral Commission. It has not been easy for her. It has meant that right up till now, that sense of calm, of authority that the Electoral Commission should have, is still to some extent missing. But she has come out publicly to say that she's determined to supervise a transparent process. We are players in the drama and in the game. Mm-hmm. We have to take her at her word and work towards it. Unfortunately, the initial steps that have been taken, the early voting on Thursday and even of today, seems to have problems that ought to not to have arisen. And that has given all of us a cause for some anxiety.
Before we leave, Dana, briefly, what would be your message to your supporters and, for that matter, Ghanaians?
Firstly, imperative need to go out and vote on Wednesday. Everybody should come out and vote. There's a fear that you vote and your vote will not count. Widespread feeling that somehow or other the ruling party will find a way to steal the election. My own belief is that the best way we can defeat that, if it is true, is to have as many of us as possible actually voting. Because the more people get involved in the process, the more difficult it is to contort it, deform it. And then secondly, that all of us, we just don't leave the policing of the ballot to the party and its agent. That all of us, citizens, all of us, take it upon ourselves to be part of those who will observe the process and make sure that the process works for all of us. The decline in our economy and the difficulties that it's brought about has raised the stakes of the consequences of this election. And therefore, I think it's not possible for us to be in any way complacent or laid back about what's going to happen on Wednesday.
Nana Akufo-Addo is the presidential candidate of Ghana's main opposition, New Patriotic Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty, who is in Accra to cover tomorrow's Ghana presidential election. The government of Cameroon says its security forces did not abuse protesters during clashes in two regions of the country last month. Students and professionals in English-speaking parts of Cameroon were denouncing what they called the overbearing influence of the French language in the bilingual country. The United States has expressed deep concern about the situation. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more from Yaoundé.
Government spokesman Issa Chiroma says contrary to widespread media reports, the military did not abuse the rights of protesting teachers and lawyers in the English-speaking regions of the Central African state.
Law enforcement officers handled the demonstration in Bamenda and Boya with restraint and professionalism in strict compliance with the international laws and commitment of Cameroon in matters of human rights. Nevertheless, investigations are underway, and in the event of proven misconduct, the government will take some disciplinary and corrective measures in compliance with the provision laid down by the law.
Chiroma said Cameroon will not tolerate any attempts to disrupt the country's hard-earned national unity, insisting that requests for Cameroon to return to a federal state, a political system scrapped in a 1972 referendum, cannot be granted. The spokesman said he was reacting to a statement issued November 28 by the U.S. State Department. The release expressed concern about the deaths, injuries, and damage that resulted from protests which turned violent in Bamenda and Boya, the respective capitals of Cameroon's northwestern and southwestern regions. U.S. Ambassador to Cameroon, Michael Hoza, has also expressed concerns over the violence. He met with Cameroon's President Paul Biya and explained his country's position on the protest that turned violent.
It is the American government's position that Cameroon has great strength in diversity. Cameroon has a wonderful history of tolerance. And both President Biya and I agree that dialogue is the future for Cameroon. We know that there will be discussions, and we are certain that the Cameroonian people will find a solution and be able to live together in tolerance as they have for many, many years.
The ongoing protests were called by English-speaking lawyers, followed by teachers and then university students protesting the dominance of French in Cameroon. The lawyers have complained that some judges posted to English-speaking areas are not fluent in the language. The U.S. has extended its deferral of all non-essential travel for U.S. embassy personnel to the northwestern and southwestern regions until December 6 due to the unrest. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 6th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. The leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party says if President Paul Biya does not meet the demands of the lawyers and teachers who are protesting, things might get out of hand because the younger generation today is becoming more and more hostile towards the government. John Frundi says security forces blocked him and parliamentarians from his party who had gone to Boya to present their grievances to the governor there.
I left Bamenda at about 4 a.m. this morning for Boya, and when I got there, they sent some recruits from the military, from the police college there, to go block my parliamentarians who slept in the parliamentary flat that they should not come out, go see the governor. It was a struggle. When they heard that I'd come, and I was coming up to meet them there, that's when the boys quietly cleared part of the gate, and my parliamentarians walked out, then walked down to the ceremonial ground where we're supposed to have the rally, and I joined them all there, and we had a wonderful rally. The turnout was hectic, but I must confess that the Cameroon government is sitting on a time bomb. When we tuned the national anthem, the whole crowd went ablaze. No national anthem, no national anthem. And we started rally without a national anthem, and as such, I could not let them sing the part. I just let them go like that. It was a very sensitive crowd. Anything we talked about, unification, the kick. We had to use gymnastics to tell them that if they want secession or federation, which we are asking for, is a thing that would take one step at a time. So we are telling our parliamentarians to table the bill to bring Cameroon to a federal state again in parliament.
Mr. Frundi, what was the purpose of your trip to Boya?
You see, the vice chancellor wanted the university students to write exams. Since the teachers were on strike, these students said that they could not write these exams with their teachers on strike. So the police went on vandalizing them, breaking their doors into their hostels, stealing their laptops, their telephones, raping some girls, beating them, bringing them out and rubbing them in dirty, murky water. So when they did this, we went to decry that you cannot treat the children like that, and also to still give our solidarity to the lawyers and the teachers who are on strike.
So you went to Boya to tell the governor there to what? I guess I'm trying to figure out what the trip, why?
I went to identify myself with the lawyers and the teachers who are on strike and to see for myself at what extent or what damage they caused beating the students, breaking the doors and getting them out of their rooms. It was such a nasty situation that the children needed some comfort and assurance that people think with them.
Mr. Frundi, you are in a very difficult position, I must say, that as you said, most of the students really want secession, and you are saying that you're trying to persuade them that secession is not the right way to go. Is that correct?
That's right, that we want a federal system of governance. That's what the SDF stands for.
Do you think the current government, President Paul Biya, is very encouraging to your idea?
We started advancing and selling this idea to them a long time ago. That's why they came to propose decentralization for Cameroon, which is not working. And if it's not working, we have to arm twist them to give in to the federal option.
So in the meantime, the lawyers and the teachers are still on strike.
They are still on strike, yes.
What do you say to them? In order for them to end it, what do you want the government to do?
We want the government to fulfill their demand, because all this has been going on for a long time.
Mr. Frundi, you are a veteran politician. Where do you think things are going right now in Cameroon? Where do you think? How do you see? Is there a way out of this at all?
If Mr. Biya doesn't give in to the teachers and the lawyers to come up with a solution to their problems, then things might get out of hand, because the younger generation is very hostile. And I pray and hope that they do. Otherwise, things will get out of hand and will not be very healthy for the unity of this country.
John Frundi is the leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. He was speaking with me from Yaoundé. The United Nations is launching a record appeal of $22.2 billion to provide life-saving assistance for nearly 93 million of the world's most vulnerable people in 33 countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where the appeal is being made to international donors.
The United Nations says the world is facing the biggest humanitarian crisis since World War II. It says more than 128 million people affected by conflict, displacement, and natural disasters need urgent support. Of this number, the UN is appealing for money to help nearly 93 million of the most acutely vulnerable people in need of immediate life-saving assistance. UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs Stephen O'Brien says money from this multi-billion dollar appeal will make a vital difference in the lives of tens of millions of people.
It will translate into life-saving food assistance to people on the brink of starvation in the Lake Chad Basin and South Sudan. It will provide protection for the most vulnerable people in Syria, in Iraq, and in Yemen. And it will enable education for children whose schooling is disrupted by El Nino, among many other responses.
The crisis in Syria is the United Nations' biggest humanitarian concern, with plans to help nearly 13 million people who are displaced within the country or living as refugees in neighboring countries. O'Brien says humanitarian assistance is only a stopgap measure. He tells VOA a desperately needed political solution is the only thing that will ultimately bring to an end the suffering of the Syrian people who have been at war for more than 5 years.
Humanitarians can do no more than fill the gaps of people who either need food or shelter or medicines or treatments or evacuation or who need access to water and sanitation and hygiene and other non-food items in order simply to survive.
Besides Syria, the United Nations cites Yemen, South Sudan, and Nigeria as among the greatest drivers of humanitarian needs, prompting large-scale displacements within and outside these countries. Indeed, the United Nations notes that about 1.2 million people, 80% of them women and children, have fled South Sudan, making this the biggest refugee movement in Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A United Nations report says a lack of education for girls in the developing world may be contributing to a rise in global poverty. The UN's 2016 State of the World Population Report, unveiled last Thursday in Jordan's capital Amman, focuses on the well-being of 10-year-old girls as indicators of development success or failure. It says most of the world's 10-year-old children live in developing countries where girls face obstacles to good education, health care, and safety. It points out disadvantages of continued gender inequality among half of the world's young population. This is Latika Hoke has more.
Students from the Princess Alia School for Girls in Amman sang about gender equality at a news conference for the release of the 2016 State of the World Population Report by the United Nations Population Fund. The report says 89% of the world's 125 million 10-year-olds live in developing countries. It says 35 million 10-year-old girls live in countries considered to be very unequal in terms of gender.
In some parts of the world, a 10-year-old girl looks forward to her horizons opening up so she can achieve her goals. Elsewhere, however, she is up against closed doors. Her prospects are limited while her future is determined by others or by her harsh environment, including factors threatening her safety and socioeconomic promise.
10-year-old girls in many impoverished countries are not far from being married off. More than 60 million are not in school. They do twice as many chores as boys their age, and they serve as unpaid labor more than the boys do. Every 10 minutes, an adolescent girl dies of violence, and many of them are infected with the HIV virus as a result of rape. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for young girls.
Let us remember that we are all responsible. Let us remember that our every word and deed, positive or negative, can affect the road a girl travels from this crossroads in her life. This is what will shape her role in society, which is to say our society and our world.
The UN report says that investment in the health, education, and empowerment of 10-year-old girls can triple a girl's lifetime income.
Failing to invest in girls is nothing less than planned poverty. Unless we invest in girls, we're planning to have a poorer future. And this, I think, is a theme that cannot be emphasized too much.
The report concludes that undermining girls is harmful not only to their communities, but to humanity as a whole. Slavica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The fifth annual Parcours art event is being held this week in Dakar, Senegal. The event features 19 exhibits throughout the city. Spokesperson Jessia Dion tells Ricky Schreier they hope the event builds on Dakar's vibrant art scene as well as serves as a tourism draw to the West African country.
In French, the meaning of parcours is an itinerary, and we can also say like a map, but there is a word play in the word parcours to tell that it's an itinerary of art. And the concept of it, of that event, is that several galleries, around 20, organized exhibitions. So if you are in Dakar, you know that every year you have the possibility, the chance to visit about 20 exhibitions, different exhibitions.
Are the artists from a certain region or does their art focus on a certain topic?
They are African artists from Senegal, but from West Africa too. They are artists from everywhere, actually. We don't have a subject. We did have a subject and a theme the first year, but now we really notice that there is no need to have a subject because there are so different gallery art spaces, and they have their own subject.
How do you think, as an art expert, art helps contribute to the local economy or maybe tourism? Or, you know, how does it play into the bigger development of the country?
I think maybe with tourism, it's better because we are able to reach a big part of people from everywhere. And also, I would say that it... It helped people from here to really exchange and to really be informed and interested by the art. By art, yes. Economically, I really don't know. I cannot say something because it's really hard here in Africa.
How do you think the Dakar's art scene has grown over the last few years?
Obviously, Dakar is a great city to welcome artists and works, but there is a lot of work to do, and this is why we do things like parcours to really encourage people who don't know. I don't know about music and you know that kind of art, but I know about visual art. This is actually difficult to people to understand, to see, so we really want to encourage them, and I think that we are in the great path for with parcours, but also with all the artistic manifestations.
That was Jessia Dion, spokesperson for the Parcours art event, and she was speaking to Ricky Strayek from Dakar, Senegal. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations says it has identified 41 peacekeepers accused of sexual abuse in the Central African Republic. UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric said 25 of the peacekeepers are from Burundi, while 16 are from Gabon, and he said they are suspected in alleged sexual abuse that took place in 2014 and 2015. Responsibility for further investigation lies with Burundi and Gabon, Dujarric said, adding the United Nations expects those countries to do an investigation and bring the perpetrators to justice. He said all of the alleged perpetrators had been rotated out of the Central African Republic before the allegations surfaced. That is it for this Tuesday, December 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a nice day, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America, on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.